So hey guys, thanks for listening to that recording, that message from the guys at Anchor. They're my paid sponsor. I really appreciate them. Without Anchor, I wouldn't be able to bring you the podcast that I do for Spotify and Apple and whatnot. And so check them out at Anchor. Also, I always have to thank the guys at Solderweld, www.solderweld.us, and they're the makers of Alcop and 15% round rod, and they're really good people, and they make hot block. That's why we use the hashtag block the burn. Today's podcast is really kind of a cool one. It was kind of by accident. I had an Instagram follower that T. Nuzzy, who sent me this article about a lady named Liz Sandwith. And Liz, is that pronounced right? Was that right?
Yep.
Okay. So Liz Sandwith, and she's up in New Brunswick. And is that Canada? That's Canada, right?
That's right, yeah.
Okay. New Brunswick, Canada. And she's way on the East Coast. So I'm over in Arizona where it's about 80 degrees today. And she is way over on the East Coast up in Northern Canada. And what's the temperature today?
Oh, it's not too bad here. It's probably minus one. Degrees
so
Celsius.
So that's about 31 degrees, 30 degrees, I think, for Fahrenheit?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And so she's up there and you got a little bit of snow, I'm sure. Still?
Oh, lots of snow.
Lots of snow.
Oh. So much snow, yes.
Too much. And so she, an article came out about her, this lady, and that she is the very first, I want to say the very first woman, lady, who became certified in HVAC and refrigeration. Now, the certifications in the states vary by state. Here in Arizona, it's a driver's license and an EPA card. Sometimes. I think some guys just have a library card and an EPA card. But in Canada, the trades are they're hard to get into as far as not, you know, doing it, but the certifications and the training. And Liz is going to talk about it because it's, when I read her article, read the article about her, it shows that there's a big difference between Canada and the way they view the blue-collar industry as far as the professionalism, the certification, and the training, and the way some of the places like here in Arizona and California, where I'm from, that don't really view it as, I mean, it's a job, but they don't view it as far as the training and the certifications. So Liz is with us today. And Liz, now, we pre-talked, pre-spoke. Tell us a little bit about you. So we kind of know who you are.
Yeah, okay. So I'm currently 42 years old, and I used to work at a veterinary hospital and decided when I was 37 to change careers, and I wanted to go into something that would kind of be the best return for my buck kind of thing, for retraining. And my ex-husband was also into HVAC and had been for about 18 years, so I was really familiar with it and with trades in general, and decided that I was going to go back to school and pursue this career. So I did, and it's an apprenticeship. It's typically about 4 years. We need 7,200 hours to complete it, and you have to be indentured by a company, so it's a relationship between an apprenticeship association, your employer, to come along and become certified. So not only do you have to do the training, you have to get a job where someone is willing to indenture you and train you along the way. And I've been with the same company for the past 4 years. It's Black & McDonald, we're Canada-wide. About 5,500 employees from coast to coast. We have also an office down in Bermuda, and I do commercial HVAC and refrigeration. And so, I'm the first Red Seal, so I'm the first Red Seal endorsement in New Brunswick for a woman. There's lots of like plumbers and electricians and whatnot that also have Red Seal endorsements, but I'm the first one for refrigeration in my province.
So That's a lot. That's a lot for you. Congratulations. Yeah. Like, yay.
You know, so
hopefully people out there are listening and they're like, holy crap. So you're 37, you're working as a DVM, right?
I wasn't a veterinarian. I was a manager. So I managed the veterinary practice.
When did it occur to you that, you know, I'm 37, I'm cruising through life, and this is not, like, was there something, like, you got up one morning and went, whoa, or, you know, or when did that happen?
What was the catalyst? I don't know. I just, we were a mom and pop shop initially at the veterinary hospital that I worked at, and we were bought out by a corporation. And I didn't like the writing I saw on the wall. I liked the, you know, the small town animal hospital kind of feel, and I didn't want to go along for that ride and it be distorted. So I thought it was a good time to make the move. And quite honestly, maybe I'm regretting this a little bit, but I was a little tired of being indoors all day, and I thought I'd like to do something that involves being outside. And I'm sure, as you know, that can be some days wonderful working outside and some days not so much. Right. But overall, I do really like it.
Now, when we pre-spoke, we spoke about your first husband, and he was in the trade. Was he?
Yep, and is.
And he still is. Was he a huge part? I mean, when you guys were talking about it, did you guys look at each other and you were like, honey, this is not for me? Did he influence you, or was this something that you had been thinking about for a while?
I knew I wanted to get into it. I'm a bit of a tomboy too, so I thought, you know, working with my hands was the way I wanted to go. And when I kind of looked at, when we looked at what I wanted to do, I thought, you know, do I want to go into electrical completely, or do I want to venture into refrigeration where I'd get to do some electrical, but also get to turn some wrenches as well. And that was much more appealing to me. I'd say he was very influential in that, because I knew that I'd have that home base, that home support, where if I had questions about something I saw at work that day, or questions about something I was studying in school, that I had a sounding board. I had someone who could who would talk to me about it and help explain to me if I had questions. So that was really definitely, it just worked out all around. And he was very supportive. I had to move away, essentially, for a year for my first year of training. So I was like 2 hours away, and came home on weekends kind of thing for that first year. And, yeah, still someone that I talk to this day, like when I got my red seal endorsement, and we have to do four exams, like 4 years, 4 years in the making kind of thing. So you complete block one and two and three and four. And when I got my block four exam results back, which you have to pass before you can write your interprovincial exam, the IP or the red seal, I texted him. He's like, I knew you could do it. I'm so proud of you. So we still to this day have a really great relationship. He's, you know, definitely one of my biggest fans and definitely in my corner.
So I think one of the things that I wanted to ask a little bit too, maybe, and if it's, you know, personal, I understand. You guys are going through this thing, and you said you had to move away. Why did you have to move away?
Because it's offered here in New Brunswick through NBCC or New Brunswick Community College. It's a community college, and there's different campuses all around the province that offer different trades or different courses. And the refrigeration course has been there for, I think, like 50 years, and it's in St. Andrews, so that's 2 hours away from where I am. It's very close to Maine. There's actually a border very nearby in St. Stephen that goes into Calais, I believe, Calais, Maine, so which is way on the east coast and up in northern Maine kind of thing. I had to go and study for a year at the school before I could write my first exam and pass that, and then be able to work in the trade and try to accumulate hours and experience to go back and do the same thing again, but on a 7-week term for block two, and then work again for another year and do the same thing for block three and so on. And now I'm all done. But it's been 4 years, and I have 8,000 hours in the trade at this point.
So 8,000 hours. I mean, I know that a work year is about 2,080 hours. So you've been in it about 4.5, 5 years. Is that right?
Yep, that's right.
So the reason I asked you about the moving away part is I'd never heard of that before. And again, you know, the states are much different than even the rest of the world. I've talked to technicians in the UK, and I have a good friend of mine that's Ref Balance. He's down in Australia, and he's a Frigie. That's what they call him, and the Frigies and the Trades and stuff. But they, you know, even their schooling is so much different than here in the States. That's why I was curious about the moving away. So you move away, you come back. You know, was there a huge wall put up as far as ladies and women in the trade, or is it very open where you live that it's like it's normal and it's welcoming?
Somewhere in the middle of that, I would say. So the company that I was hired by, they hadn't had a woman plumber or electrician, or like they hadn't had a woman hired in that capacity before. But fortunately, through our schooling, you do a 3-week practicum. So at the end of the year before you graduate, you can be placed somewhere. So you work for them for free, kind of thing, for 3 weeks. They get to try you out. And I was able to secure a spot there because I know tons of people in the area in the trade, and they gave me a contact, kind of thing, and were supportive, and went for an interview, and they took me on for my practicum, and then I was able to demonstrate to them that I kind of half knew what I was doing, I guess. And you're a new apprentice, you're just, you know, it has to be dangerous, but regardless, they offered me a position at the end of that 3 weeks, and, you know, being a woman with them has never been an issue for me. I've never felt any sort of discrimination or anything like that. I'm not saying it isn't out there. I've talked to other women who've had lots of problems. I don't know if it's my personality. I'm just, you know, I'm kind of one of the guys. I'm not a very girly girl. Like, I don't have a makeup bag at work or anything like that. And I'm there to work, kind of thing, and joke around and have as much fun as you can and still get your job done. And yeah, it's really never been an issue for me. But also in commercial, I think that's a different world than doing residential. So residential, I think you'd have to prove yourself almost every call you went to, depending on what kind of customer you had, where, you know, I'm in a very professional world where they expect the person that Black McDonald is sending to fix their issue or to do their maintenance actually knows what they're doing, and that they're, I'm just welcomed. I do my job, and then I, you know, shake a hand and I leave. So, yeah.
I mean, I won't dwell on it. I remember I had a podcast with a young lady named Ariel the Mermaid on Instagram, and Ariel mentioned that about the residential side of it, that she would go to houses and people would be looking for the guy to walk through the door, and she's, nope, I'm here, and I'm going to take care of your furnace, and I'm going to make it, you know, I'm going to make you comfortable again, and she went through a little bit of it until she proved herself. So, awesome job, very empowering. So did you kind of move away from it? Cause it's an awesome story. The trade life in Canada is so much different. Is the pay really high in Canada, or is it a high cost of living, or is it that the trades do really well?
So I'd say, like, just as in the States, it kind of varies from province to province.
Don't give hourly rates though. The hourly rate thing isn't the question. I don't want you to go to like, yeah, we make $100 an hour. Cause if you do that, I'm moving to Canada, but I am on the way. But, no, seriously, it was more like, is it super respected? Do you drive down the street and people are like, hey, Liz, and they know you're a refrigeration tech or you're something, and is it real high respect where you live?
I think it's the same as anywhere else. Like, I think there's still a big mentality of if you're going to if you're going to be anything, you have to graduate high school and then go to university. I think that, you know, maybe there's a bit of a paradigm shift coming because you go to university and you have 4 years of have accumulated debt and an arts degree, and you come out and you scratch your head and go, I still don't know what I want to do. So, you know, I think our day is coming. I think it's kind of we're getting there. But no, I mean, I wear a blue collar like all my brothers and sisters out there that do a trade, and I get dirty every day, and I'm, you know, not no one's rolling out the red carpet for me. But as far as people understand that it's just good, honest work that typically pays decently. There are companies, private companies, that don't pay their tech so well. Like an apprentice might be making almost minimum wage when they get out of block one, or you could be working for a company that has a national union supporting it, as do I, and you make, you know, decent money when you come out, and it gets better as you progress through the apprenticeship until you're Red Seal, and then that's kind of like a top dollar situation there, depending, unless you have other tickets, like if you have, because there's more, if you have your gas ticket or your electrical ticket, you might make a little bit more money, but it can be very lucrative. I make good money. I have a good pension plan. I am in a national union, so I do make, you know, good wages that way. And I think it deserves way more respect than it gets at this point, because you can, my other option before I went back to school, I was thinking about becoming, the other thing that I was interested in would be nursing degree. So I would have had to go to university for 4 years and accumulate probably between $20,000 and $40,000 worth of debt, and then come out and make similar wages to what I'm making now. Where I went to community college, I came out with no debt. In between the time that I took my blocks and I was out working, earning my hours, I was making money that whole time. So you earn as you learn, and you know, now I make bank.
Again, congratulations.
Thank you.
So you're going through this process, and you're married now, a different husband, your first husband, you guys, and you're good friends. We talk about it. We spoke about it. Good friends.
Yes.
And your guy now, the love of your life now, is he's also a tradesman. Do you guys go home and be like, oh my God, you're not going to believe I did this compressor and I couldn't pull a Micron and I couldn't do this and that? Do you guys talk to trade, or do when you get home, do you like, I'm done?
No, we definitely talk shop. We kind of download at the end of the day. If you had a good day or a bad day, you kind of talk about it. And, you know, we can use each other as a soundboard and give each other ideas. And we both do refrigeration, but I do commercial HVAC. So I'm on roofs at, you know, casinos and malls and et cetera, a lot of commercial places. And he does industrial ammonia, so he's at he does skating rinks and cold storage and things like that. So we do slightly different trade, but it all boils down to the same thing. You know, we're moving refrigerant around, and so we talk superheat and subcooling and head pressure, and yeah, for sure, it's great.
Does he ever say to you, oh, Liz, you won't understand because you only do commercial air conditioning? Where
no,
I know.
No, we don't. We don't harp on each other at all.
Okay, good.
But we also work for the same company. So if he's on call and he gets a call for a rink that he's going to go to in the middle of the night, then I hop in the van and I go with him.
Really?
So, yeah, absolutely.
Wow.
So,
yeah, my wife and I are not in the same trade, so that's, I was kind of curious.
No.
I've never spoken to somebody in the trade before, because I would be the one going, I've got to run this ammonia call. You go over there and play with your 5-ton scroll, and you know, just to give a hard time to.
No, it's great because we can, you know, we really understand kind of when you go through an apprenticeship. There's lots of uncertainty, and you're scratching your head going, you know, did I do this right? Did I mess up today? Or so we can kind of build each other up. And, it's great to hop in the van with each other and go give each other. He's helped me so many times, like on a weekend when I had to do a bunch of stuff, he'll just come along and give me a hand, and he'll work for free, and I'll do the same for him.
Did you ever get to, like, a hard question when you were studying, go to him and go, hey, I need some help, I don't understand this, and he's like, you got to study, I'm not giving you the answer?
Oh, no, never. He would always help me.
Okay.
He's super strong, and he's a super smart guy, and his math skills are way above mine. So
awesome.
It's a long time ago that I was in high school, and it didn't really, you know, stick in a practical sense. So if I didn't understand an equation, he'll take me through it and get me to where I need to be.
Well, congratulations. Congrats.
Thanks.
Sounds awesome. There's endless opportunities in blue collar. You and I both know that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you and I both know, along with thousands of other people, millions of other people around the world, about the college and the skills gap amongst people, right? The skills gap amongst the trades, including ours, which is air conditioning, refrigeration, industrial refrigeration, whatever it is. Like you said, we're moving free on from one spot to another. But why do you think there is a skills gap, and not just because of college? And it's kind of a two-part question. Why do you think there's a skills gap, and is it hard for apprentices to get a job?
Okay, So I think one of the main reasons that there's a skills gap is, we have a bunch of guys that are boomers that are retiring very, like, now and in the very near future.
Me? That's me. Hi.
Yeah, right. You're looking forward to that, I'm sure. I'm already looking forward to it. But, we have lots of very knowledgeable, journey people retiring, and we don't have people trained to take their place yet. So I think it's a priority to get people knowledgeable and up to par on skills to help fill these positions. And what was the second part to your question?
The second one is part of the skills gap, I think, and this is my personal opinion, is that a lot of companies don't want to hire apprentices. So all these young people come out of trade schools and then they can't find jobs because they're looking for mid-years. Do you see that where you live? Have you heard of, and it may be different because you have to be tied to a company. Have you heard of people or young people where they come out of trade school and it's like, I can't find a job?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's not just like within refrigeration, air conditioning, but exactly like you're saying, like in the skills trade gap, because we have something like 1/3 of all people that enter a trade don't finish it. And I think that has a lot to do with some of a generational thing a little bit. So I think, by the time a person gets ready to retire, he's probably seen so many apprentices come and go that he's sick and tired of having to train everyone and doesn't want to do it anymore, except for a select few. I think I've been really fortunate, and my husband George's been really fortunate, that we've been paired up with people that are happy to train us, happy to share the knowledge that they have. They're not just kind of hoarding it. They want the next generation to be competent and safe, which is a big thing, competent and safe in their work. So they're willing to spread that knowledge in whatever way they can. But I know lots and lots of people that have had issues with journey people not wanting to train, not wanting to hire, not wanting to help the younger people coming up through. They just want to go do their work and go home. And I think, a big part, as an apprentice for the past 4 years, I've had mentors that have really helped me through that, not been afraid or unwilling to share their information, because there's 16 different ways to do a certain task. And if you have someone kind of helping you, show you the ropes on how to get through it properly, it certainly shaves a lot of time off the job. You might not understand all aspects of something until someone else shows you how to go through it. And if there's no one there to help you do that, you're kind of struggling on your own. It can be very, very frustrating. It can cost your company time, perhaps hurt yourself. I think everyone kind of needs to work together to make sure that people are trained properly and that we can deliver the best service possible from, you know, from being an apprentice all the way through being a journeyman. I love social media and the internet now, you know, is far more advanced from when, you know, everyone was just looking in textbooks.
Right.
They have to try to figure out what was going on with something. Now we have all that technology at our fingertips, which is wonderful. But nothing quite beats, you know, having someone there picking up a tool and showing you how to use it. So I think the forums that they have now are wonderful. I know there's a lot of joking that goes on a lot of them, but I think it's genuinely great to have people willing to talk and help train the younger generation coming up through.
Yeah, it's you know, it's hard because, excuse me, when I started in the trade in the mid-80s, you know, we didn't have technology, and so you sat on a rooftop, and I've talked about this on other podcasts, right? I would sit on the rooftop till dark, past dark, because I didn't have a phone, I didn't have a computer, none of that stuff was invented yet.
You had your pager.
Pager was a red light where I had to then go down to my truck, get the phone card, you know, call, find a payphone, God forbid having to touch a payphone, you know, call the office, have the operator call my boss, page my boss, then take the phone line and connect the two phone lines together, talk about the problem, say I'm stuck, I can't find this, I don't have 24 volts, him give me direction, write everything down, then go back up on the roof and then try to figure out what he gave me. And then by now it's dark. It no diagnostic boards, no red lights, no diagnostic codes. You didn't know why it tripped off on head. If you figured out that it tripped off on head, no, you know, systems today that give a fault and you have a flashing light or you have an E code or whatever. All of the, none of that was there. I was working on systems that were built in the 60s. And 70s, and none of it was there, and it made me, I think, a really good tech at that time. I think it's because you had no choice but to stand there and fix it. So I like technology. I love the cell phone. I love the ability to be able to call somebody. It's sometimes I think the HVAC jerks. If you ever listen to their podcast, the jerks had talked about that it may be sometimes dumbed down technicians because it makes them too quick to make a phone call.
Yeah, I think that happens a lot.
So, and please, I'm glad you're in Nova Scotia for this, or New Brunswick for this next comment, because we're going to talk about age and I don't want you to punch me in the face. So, you mentioned that you were 42 years old.
Yep.
I get lots and lots and lots of questions when I go to trade schools and I talk in front of apprentices that haven't graduated yet that say, I'm 40, I'm 45, I'm 50, I'm 42, I'm in a second career, am I too old? Is 42 too old? Or is... Are you seeing in your area, are you seeing lots of people your age or maybe 5 years younger or 5 years older just starting out in HVAC, refrigeration, or any blue-collar trade?
No, not typically. Like, it's, we're certainly not the norm to be starting a second career at 42 years old in a trade, but I don't think you're ever too old. I mean, maybe my back already isn't the greatest because I've lived for so long.
You've lived forever at 42.
But But you know, and it's a heavy trade. Like you're lugging jugs of refrigerant across the roof and tanks of nitrogen and up roof hatches. And, you know, it's not physically an easy job. But it doesn't mean it can't be done. There's lots of ways to work smart when you can. I mean, there's lots of times that you're just screwed. Like you just have to lug it up a flight of stairs and up a roof hatch and all the way across the roof and that's that. So, you know, those days maybe the age factor comes in a little bit, but other than that, no, I see no reason not to go ahead and change careers. If you're not happy with what you're doing, you get one, you know, one go through here. You might as well enjoy yourself or have something that you feel a sense of accomplishment or reward at the end of the day. I come home lots of days exhausted, but mentally happy, if that makes any sense.
No, makes total sense.
So why not, you know, go for it. And if you can be so lucky as to find this kind of thing when you first get into school and have an idea that you want to do it and go and get into it then great. You know, you've got that much longer that you feed into your pension. But if you're an old gal like me and 42 and or 37 and just kind of starting out on that stuff, then go for it. Why not?
What did... You know, you mentioned the old gal. That's funny. At 42. So that means I'm 55. I'm ancient.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
I know.
Just kidding.
My kids tell me that all the time.
It depends on your mental age. I think my mental age is still quite young.
So then I'm about 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah, I'm about 12, okay. I think.
You know, there's so much. You talked about the skills and not being too old and getting into it. There's tons of opportunities besides just out in the field. Are you, like, what is your career path? What do you want to go to? Is it that you want to be in the field for the next 20 years? Or in your training process, and if this is giving too much away to where your company goes, oh, no. Like, is there something that at your company where you're like, you know what, I'm doing this, I want to learn this, but I've been eyeballing that?
Right. So I've been in kind of a middle management position and didn't enjoy myself very much. So I don't think you'll see me, you know, going in and hanging up my tool belt and managing a place or anything like that. That's not for me. You know, I'm also not going to be lugging a cylinder of nitrogen across a roof when I'm 60. So, you know, between here and there, yeah, I'm open to other opportunities, including something that's always kind of been in the back of my mind is teaching. I enjoy the idea of helping other people come along as students and as technicians towards their chosen career. I really love what we have in place here for apprenticeship. I like the idea that you get paired up with someone with more knowledge and you come along in your career. And that way, I think there needs to be more support for apprentices, not necessarily just women in trades, but just apprentices in general kind of thing. So you get a fair shake and you're not, because, you know, when you're just out of school and you're green and you just want a job, you just want to work. You don't want to, make any waves or anything like that. So I think there kind of needs to be a voice for apprentices sometimes. So yeah, like those kind of things are on my mind, but for now I'm excited to actually be at the end of my, my schooling career myself and, work.
Does, obviously the trades provide you and your husband a great life. Your family provides a great life. If you were, and this is a loaded question, if you were to tell me right now, like, what would the negatives of the trades be? Would there be any? Would you be able
for
to?
Sure. Gotcha.
What do you think some of the negatives are?
It's hard on your body. There's a lot of things that we work with that are, you know, are I'm not going to say unsafe, but, you have to be careful with. You have to respect the kind of thing that you're doing. You know, there's a high chance of you getting hurt at work, whether it's touching 600 poles or falling off the edge of a roof, or just, you know, messing your back up to not being able to work again, cutting a finger. Like, there's lots of safety issues that you need to definitely respect and be aware of. It can be really mentally challenging, hard on the head. I don't really enjoy being out on a roof at minus 20 fixing someone's heat. I think anyone would be lying to say that they enjoy being up shivering on a roof somewhere.
But I mean, we know that. Like, we know that as tradespeople. You can't, like a young person coming in, and I get this all the time. I've had people that have gone living, born and raised in Arizona, just like probably born and raised in New Brunswick. They go through the apprenticeship program and then they get on the rooftop and they're like, oh my God, it's so hot, or oh my God, it's freezing. And then they're out. They're like, dude, you just put all this time in, you know, even if it's a year, you know, they put in a time of like a year's worth of time and they're gone.
Yeah.
Do you get a lot of that where you live? Because it's real high here where I live.
Yeah, well, we have extremes. We have, you know, very cold and very hot. In the summer, it's not unusual to be very, very warm on a roof. And we do have a high dropout rate as far as people not sticking with the trade because they didn't quite realize how much actual work it is. But maybe I think that's just me to people that aren't meant to stick with it. And there's lots of different, like, you can do commercial, you can do residential. There's lots of sideways movement kind of thing when it comes to, you can work in a supply house and behind the counter. You can be a sales rep. You can work for a chemical company. So I think there's enough diversity in the trade that anyone who gets into it can surely find something to do that fits with them.
So we're slowly wrapping up. I told you it would go fast. It's almost 40 minutes.
Yeah, it has.
If there is something, like, is there a motto that you live by? Like, for me, it's do the right thing and risk the consequences. And I tell people all the time, you know, even if that means me making you unpopular, as long as you do the right thing. Is there something that you live by? Is there something that an empowering woman, trades ladies, I don't really, the brotherhood or the sisterhood, is there something that you would recommend to young ladies out there that are thinking about going into the trade? Is there something that you live by, something that, because you're very empowering, you definitely got an awesome message that I think people are going to love. And again, I think that's the why you've succeeded so well, and there's a little bit of a role model in there too. Is there something that, you know, you could share with people, like what you live by, and, you know, go out and get it done?
Yeah, well, I'd say I'm a pretty subversive person. Like, I don't tend to stick with, you can't really pigeonhole me. Like, I don't know. You just do what makes you happy. Like, if you want to be a nurse. If you want to be a chef, be a chef. If you want to cut hair, go ahead. Like, do what makes you happy. We don't need boundaries to say this is a man's job or a woman's job. And the same goes to the opposite sex. Like, just screw everyone else. Do what makes you happy. And that has gotten me to a pretty happy place in life. I wouldn't change a thing. So you get one time through, you might as well make it worth it. I like lots of weird things that I'm sure lots of other people think are bizarre for a quote-unquote woman to like. I like hunting. I like dirt biking. I like four-wheeling. I also like reading and romantic movies. So just do what makes you happy.
Well, it's a great story, and I'm so glad that my friend Tinezzi took and sent it over to me. From Instagram, huge congratulations for being the first, right? The first woman to get her, the seal card, right? The red seal card?
Red seal in New Brunswick.
There you go, in New Brunswick. And congratulations. Yep. I mean, very empowering, great story. And, you know, thanks a bunch for just being you and being blue collar and getting it done.
Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity to tell my story.
You bet. So, again, this podcast is going to slowly come to an end. We've been on the phone for about 45 minutes. I told Liz, I said, it's going to go by and you're not even going to know where it went. And so be sure, on Instagram to give, Liz a follow. You can find her at Liz Sandwith, right?
Yep.
Liz Sandwith. And it's spelled, LizSandwith, right? Sandwith, WITH. And you can find her on Instagram and follow along and follow her story, because I have a feeling that even at 42 years old and as an apprentice in the trade, there's going to be a whole lot of pictures and a lot of storytelling left. So as always, the podcast is brought to you by the folks at SolderWeld. You can check them out at www.solderweld.us. They're the makers of Alcop, Round Rod, 15% Silver Brazen, and Hot Block, where we got the hashtag Block the Burn. They're just cool guys, and I like them. I always, Liz, end every thing with, you know, go be good humans. We all live on the same planet. We all walk on the same dirt, and we all breathe the same air. Just go be good humans to each other, and for that, thanks to Liz. And anything else, Liz, before we go?
Yeah, no, be good to other people and be good to apprentices. People just come up through. Give them a break.
There you go. All right, guys. Until next time, we'll see you.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.